Destination Freedom. Destination Freedom, dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people, is brought to you by station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. The state of Illinois has drawn to it more than its share of legal giants. Abraham Lincoln, John Peter Altgeld, Clarence Darrow lead the procession of Illinois attorneys whose practice has advanced the cause of the common man. Among the modern-day leaders in this tradition is the noted founder of the Cook County Bar Association, attorney Richard Westbrooks. In a chapter entitled, The Case of the Congressman's Train Ride, Destination Freedom brings you the Westbrooks story.
In Waco, Texas, where I was born, the call of the train was the first cry I heard. And train tracks and train wheels were the cradles I was rocked in. I practically grew up inside the hot cars that shuffled in and out of the southern cities, carrying my mother and me and my father.
Get ready, Ann. We're coming into Columbus. Richard, pull that suitcase over here.
Where are we staying, Charles?
Somewhere. Wherever the bishop assigns us, I don't know yet. Now, come, Ann.
How long will we stay here?
How do I know?
When will we know?
Now, Ann.
When will we know where we can settle down and rest and bring up the boy? It's time for his sake.
Now, Ann, Richard's doing all right. He's had the best schooling in every city we've lived in. He's ahead of his age. Travel hasn't hurt him. I've always found it very educational. So will he. Come now, we get off here and catch the bus.
My father was a traveling minister. Those trips to Texas cities were educational. In a way he had never intended.
Fez, Fez, please. Fez? Hey, what are you doing up in this part of the line?
I had gone ahead and gotten near the front of the line, waiting to board a bus.
You hear me?
Well, sure.
Sure what?
Sure, sir.
That's better. Now get back in the line, like you're supposed to.
Well, I've got my fare here.
Do I have to handle you myself?
Well, all I want is to get on
Richard.
The bus. But, Father, all I'm...
Do as the man says. Come on, son.
But why? Why can't I stay here?
Old as that boy's getting, you haven't got him used to his place yet.
Come on, son.
But why do I have to go in the back?
It's the law, that's why. Now go on. You're holding up the white folks. Fares? Fares, please. Have your fares ready. Fares.
In Columbus, I learned that a mysterious equation called the law said that Negro passengers stood in back of the bus lines until white passengers were seated.
I'm glad the bishop assigned me to another city, Anne. I think we'll do much better in Goliad. We should do much better in Goliad.
They should be there soon.
And in Goliad, my education went forward.
Ham sandwich and a bottle of pop.
If you don't mind, ma'am, I'd...
And you come in, Goliad, huh?
Oh, my father's the new minister over at the Methodist
Church. I'm Baptist.
Yes'm.
Your father's been in Goliad before. Should have told you how to order your meals. If you're coming back, I'll sell it to you. Not allowed to let you eat in a restaurant.
Why?
The law, that's why. Now, do you obey the law or do without eating?
I went hungry in Goliad.
You'll like it much better in Houston, son. The town's bigger than most we've been in. You'll be able to finish your high school work and learn quite a bit.
In Houston, my education went on. And nothing that I learned in books or from the tongues of teachers gave me the lesson I got the first day. My father, driving an old church buggy, had stopped near the marketplace on a shady street when around the corner a wagon whirled, crashed into the side of our buggy, and threw us both to the ground. When I got off the ground, a crowd had gathered around, watching me help Father to his feet. The wagon owner came up.
Why don't you blind fools look where you're going? You see what you did to my wagon?
You ran into us, mister. We didn't.
You calling me a liar, boy?
The boy's right. You swung your wagon into us.
You say that again, I'll take this wagon tongue to you.
No, you won't. Now, you hit us. Everybody saw you.
You're going to tell that in court?
If we have to, yes.
Say, folks. You hear what this Negro says? Says I hit him. You heard him?
Oh, sure. You all saw him, didn't you? Oh, didn't you?
You ain't got many witnesses on your side, have you, colored boy?
But they saw what happened.
You want to take it into court? We'll settle it peaceful like, preacher. The law's on my side. Now for damage to my wagon, that'll be $16.75. Damage to wheels, $18.65.
My education in Houston was costly, and it kept me wondering about the strange ways of the courts and the law. Why did some abide by it and others break it? Was it meant for all the people, or just for some of the people? Where could I learn about this law?
You'll have to ask your father about that. He knows.
I thought you had decided to become a minister.
I'd like to know about the law.
For what?
So I can see if the law can be used on the side of all the people in Texas. I don't want to be a minister. All the preaching I want to do is inside those courts.
Knowing the law won't help.
Well, why do you say that?
Come into the next room, son.
Now, Charles...
And I'm only going to prove to him how useless this thing he calls the law can be. Come here, son.
My father took me into his room, unlocked an old trunk, threw back the lid.
Look at these.
What are they?
Books. Just books of men's laws. I've studied. I know how impotent they are.
Your father is a lawyer, son. But when he saw how the laws were set against giving justice, he turned to the ministry.
I lifted out the heavy books, full of old cases and legal knowledge. I weighed them in my mind with the single book my father carried under his arm. And I decided, I'll be a lawyer. I wrote a letter to the University of Texas and got an application, sent it in, followed it on a slow train up to Austin. Walked down the campus road while the students stared, and a group followed me to the registrar's window.
Employment window's in the next building, boy. Next building.
Oh, I'm not looking for work, sir. I'd like to enroll in the law school.
Like to... Say, if some of those freshmen sent you in as a joke, go back and tell
them... There's no joke, sir. You sent me an application. Westbrook's?
Oh, you're the Richard Westbrook that got out of prep school with honors, huh?
Yes, my dad said he'd never heard of any Negroes in the University of Texas, but, well, when you sent me the application, he was surprised.
He had reason to be. When we sent that application, we didn't know you weren't white.
Well, sure, but
your dad's not the only one who's never heard of a Negro in Texas getting into this school. I've been registrar for 10 years. I've never registered one. It's against the law.
Oh, On the noon special back home, I plotted how I could break those laws. How I could unwind the spool of segregation I've known all my life.
Son, I understand there are schools in Chicago where the complexion of the student's unimportant. But to study law, it'll take money. To learn the Lord's words is absolutely free. Think about it, son. Think about it.
I had thought about it. About the sights on the Texas streets. The signs which read, "For white only." About the courts where I'd watched the Negro defendants and white juries. It was summer when the train called to me from the outskirts of Houston. I got my things together and got ready to answer it.
So you're leaving home?
I've got to. I want to be a part of the law in the land I live in. Here I feel outside of it.
You haven't even got a train.
Well, I'll find one, Dad. I read where a school in Moody wants a teacher for this summer. I've got enough money to get there. I caught a train, and when it stopped at an old sign that said, "Moody, Texas," I got off and looked around. All around me was a sea of cotton. The bent backs of field hands, sacks and bales dotted the white. A lean figure of a woman left the field and came over to me.
Did you get off the train by mistake, Sonny?
No. Is this the place where they need a teacher, ma'am?
You're the teacher's boy?
I'm the teacher. Where are the students?
In the field out there. They're mostly grown, and they've seen too much to sit to listen to a boy.
Well, they'll listen to me.
But you got to teach.
The state of Texas spends $42 a year for the education of a white student. $6 a year for the education of a Negro student. My father made up the difference in dollars and got me a better than equal education. I'd like to pass on the difference.
All right. They'll listen to you, I think.
They did. All summer. I left the fields without enough money to enter a law school, but with a stronger sense of my own debt to the oppressed and the deprived. And I looked about and took every job I could to find a way to pay it off.
What kind of a job are you looking for?
Your dining cars need waiters, I hear.
We don't hire children. You gotta be at least 21. Next, please.
I wanted to be a dining car waiter because there I could make the money I needed to pay tuition at a law school. The next week, I went back to the railroad office.
How old did you say you were?
25, sir.
Well, you look a lot like the 18-year-old I had in here last week.
Well, everyone says I look young.
I'm sorry, I still can't use you.
But, sir,
all the waiters on this road speak Spanish. We run down into Mexico. You speak Spanish?
I caught a freight, rode across the border, worked with Mexican section gangs, lived with peons, and before the month was over, I knew enough Spanish to come back to see the rail clerk again.
Oh, you again, eh?
Buenas noches, señor. Quisiera solicitar la perera, camarero.
It's not just the Spanish that you need, boy, it's the clothing.
Sí, señor?
Every waiter must have a full dress suit. Now,
Like this one?
Uh-huh.
I'd spent all my money on a suit. He looked at it for a long time.
All right.
Job's yours. You got plenty nerve, kid. Take the next train out.
I took the next train out, and a thousand trains that followed. I lived in towns I'd never known were on the map, slept in hotels that were like tents, and all the time practiced pleading cases, reread my father's law books, nursed a small pocketful of tips in my money belt until it grew into what I needed for tuition. And one evening, I ambled into the restaurant of a lazy Texas town, sat down at a tired table.
Hello, there, mate.
Chili beans.
Hey, you look lucky tonight, mate.
Try the back room.
Just chili beans.
Anything you say, mate.
Anything you say.
I ate, then stretched my tired body on a bench. Listened to the call of the trains outside. Tabbed those going east and those going west until I fell asleep. And never heard a sharper whistle blowing outside until the waiter shook me.
Hey, wake up and get out.
Uh-huh.
They're raiding the place.
What?
Wake up or you'll be sleeping in jail.
I didn't wake up soon enough. And when I did, I was in jail. I was standing in a tiny courtroom. The gamblers, the players who were caught in the dragnet, stepped one by one before a bored judge. When it came to my turn, he checked me and said,
Richard Westbrook, your first law breaking. You can get off with a fine, $50 or 30 days.
$50?
50.
I went inside my shirt to my money belt, where I'd stored the tips that were to take me to law school.
Have you got it?
Yes, sir.
There were only empty sacks in the belt.
Just what I thought. 30 days, 30 days.
Oh, Judge, I had the fine. Look, here's the bill.
Yes,
someone stole the money. There was enough to pay the fine. I was saving it.
Yes, just for such an emergency
no,
as this.
No, no, so I could pay enough money to learn how to study the law. I wanted to have money to study law where they'll have no patience with people who make mistakes, as here.
What are you saying?
I was saving the money to become a lawyer.
Gambling front was a fine place to be studying law.
Well, I've had to study law in places, Your Honor, where I could get in. Other places I've been barred from.
Like what?
Oh, like law schools here in Texas.
That's true. It's very true. Go on. I'll listen to you.
I told the Texas judge what he already knew of the laws I'd known since I was a child, which left me outside them. When I'd finished, the judge was no longer in a hurry.
You've won your first case, young man. Sentence suspended.
Well, thank you, Your Honor.
Provided.
Yes?
You hereafter study your law where you can get into a school in another state. Next. Next case.
I walked out of the courtroom, stood in the hot summer sunshine without a penny, without a job. And at night, I went within sight of the railroad tracks that stretched out east, west, north, south. They shone in the moonlight like slim silver rivers. And when a cattle car came by, headed for Chicago, I stood undecided for a while. But before the caboose had shuffled by, I was on it. I got to Chicago and made my way to the office of an old and noted lawyer and asked for his advice.
Chicago is the wrong place to come, broke, unknown, and expect to get a good start. It's a tough town. Best advice I can give you is to forget about studying law. Get a job somewhere. Any job that'll pay. Studying law won't.
I took his advice, went downtown, stared around at the tall buildings and went inside a law school and asked for a job.
There is a job open here for a janitor, if you care to take it.
I'll take it.
Good. Now, if you'll go down the hall to the employment manager.
What office is this?
Oh, this is the student registration office. I'm the dean. Is something else on your mind?
Oh, are you sure I'll get the job as janitor?
Oh, that Certainly.
And the salary?
Adequate, I think.
Well, is it adequate to pay tuition here?
Well, you mean you want to register?
If that job will pay my tuition.
Well, it doesn't exactly pay that much, but... Come inside, young man. Let's talk this thing over.
We sat down, and when the talk was finished, I was enrolled in law school, probing freely into the why and how of those influences that determine decisions in courts of justice. The classes were hard, but I made the grade.
Congratulations, Westbrooks. You passed the bar. You're a lawyer now.
I was ready. Ready to be called on to pay my debt to the oppressed, the underprivileged, the underdog as they sought for justice. I looked around for work with companies I'd known best, the railroad.
I don't think we have any jobs for Negroes in our legal department, young man. But the dining rooms are still open. The dining rooms are still open.
I found that the companies wanted their waiters colored, their lawyers white. So I moved inside the segregated Negro community, opened law offices with a partner, took in cases as they came. They came in, slowly at first, small affairs, claims, deeds, suits. I took each one as though the fate of the world depended on the outcome.
Yes, many small, petty cases.
Why did you fight for them so hard? You burn yourself out. Why do you fight for them so hard?
I fought for them because I was fighting for myself. Because I could not stand to hear a man or a woman in trouble. Did not throw my heart and soul into the fight for their relief and liberation.
Taking cases of disorderly conduct to the appellate court. Why do you fight so hard? It's not worth it.
Whenever I could secure justice for people in trouble, it was always worth it, and more. My cases multiplied, and their character ran the gauntlet from disorderly conduct to murder. My client stood with his back to the door, looking at me.
You lawyer Westbrooks?
That's my name. Sit down.
Stay where you are.
Didn't you come to see me?
Just ask if you'll take my case.
What have you done?
I've killed a man.
His haunted face told me of the fear that was in him before he told me how it got there.
I wasn't out to kill anyone. All I wanted was some money, me and the gang. I did wrong, I know it, but is there anything you can do for me? Is there anything? Before they get here, tell me.
I took Martin Younger's case and sought to make the courts understand that murder has its cause in society. And even a killer must be understood.
Wexford State picked up penalty in Younger's case. Westbrook defense killer. Wexford.
And the death penalty in this case and hundreds of others became my implacable enemy.
Westbrook appeals Younger's case. Westbrook failed.
And thereafter I slept through no night, but woke time and again to dig into countless cases for circumstances and decisions which would give life and not death to Martin Younger.
Wexler, Younger's lawyer wins case, you better help. Younger's lawyer wins case, you better help.
And I appealed and changed through 38 of 40 courts, seeking a more exact justice than the law of an eye for an eye. Then came the jury's verdict.
Wexler, Younger gets chair. Wexler, Younger gets chair at the 3-year trial.
I saw the law still standing.
It's all right, attorney. You did more than anyone else ever could.
If we could get to the governor.
I'll skip the governor. In a week, he'll forget I ever lived. They won't forget you or what you said in court. You made me understand what happened to me before I pulled that trigger. So long. This is where I get off.
Some cases I lost. Others I won. And people came to me for everything from charges of disturbing the peace to killing, from divorce to robbery to rioting. They just kept coming, some with millions, most with nothing.
Some wanted miracles I thought only God could perform, but I would try and often win. Still, I knew I had not paid off my debt for the lessons I'd learned in Texas. Until one Saturday, a tall visitor walked in.
Mr. Westbrook's, I believe.
You're right.
I've been reading quite a bit about your criminal cases, sir.
Well, they always play up my criminal cases, but most of the cases I handle are civil.
I thought so. And unusually well, I hear. That's why I brought you mine.
Go ahead, sir.
Have you done much writing on trains, attorney?
He leaned over and looked at me and flexed his tawny brown hands. And I thought of the trains I'd ridden in Texas while I listened to him.
I was in Virginia, and I'd gotten a ticket down to Hot Springs. I was seated comfortably on a Pullman all the way into Memphis. I was half asleep, and I noticed the porter was taking my bags, going up the aisle. I called. Oh, porter?
Porter's just changing your room. Nothing wrong, just changing your room.
For what?
You're going into Hot Springs, aren't you?
Sure, but am I the only one in the car who's got to change?
You're the only one in here who's Negro, aren't you?
We all paid the same price.
Look, friend, I don't set the price, but the law says from that point on, colored in the colored car, white in the white car. You moving?
No, I'm not.
I think you will. Segregation's a law. Porter, get him moved out of here. Porter.
After that, they went to work on me heavy. They finally got me inside the big Jim Crow car, and I rode the rest of the way. Now, I think this legal segregation is illegal, attorney. I want to try to stop it. Are you interested in the case?
More than any case I've had in my life.
Very good. What'll your fee be?
Free.
What?
If you're willing to fight along with me, take this case to the Supreme Court, I'll fight it free.
We'll shake on it.
By the way, just for the record, before you go, what's your name?
Oh, I thought you knew. Congressman Arthur Mitchell, 1st District, Illinois.
I took the case of the congressman who had been segregated and forced to ride as a second-class citizen in the country he represented. And I carried it through the Supreme Court, and the decision was unanimous.
It is the opinion of this court in the case of Arthur Mitchell versus the Tennessee Railroads that it is illegal to segregate passengers in interstate transportation because of race, creed, or color.
When the judges handed down this decision, I knew I was beginning to pay off a small part of my debt to the people of Texas, that I was on my way to proving that all laws should apply to all people. I knew now that the spirit of the American Constitution must be protected and fought for in every way possible, and that someday my country would become truly the land of the free and the home of the brave.
You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of The Case of the Congressman's Train Ride, the story of attorney Richard Westbrooks. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and produced by John Cowan. The role of Richard Westbrooks was played by Oscar Brown, Jr. Others in the cast were Weslin Tilden, George Kluge, Bob White, Russ Reed, and Dean Almquist. The special music was composed by Dick Shores and played by Mary Sinclair and Jose Bethencourt. Our technician was Gary DeVlieg, sound effects by Dave Squires. This is Charles Chan inviting you to be with us next Sunday when Destination Freedom will bring you the story of the Angel of Federal Street. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.